You're good, but I'm really good.
Okay, then. We'll just leave it at that.
How are you doing? Other than that, I've been just having a really great morning. We had some crazy stuff go on here, and Paltalk deleted our room, completely deleted our room yesterday.
I think I got your email about that, yeah.
So we're in a whole new place now. We're in,
okay.
We're in a section that's religion and spirituality.
Still on Paltalk?
Still on Paltalk.
Okay.
But we changed the name because we had to, Awakening Together Sanctuary Home. So we added a home onto the end of our name. And it seems to be pretty steady. although we have been having a lot of people because it's now in the religion and spirituality section, where before we were very safely tucked away under education. And so only people who are looking for education would find us. Now we have the pleasure of having, appears to be, pardon my expression, every religious nut job in the world coming in the room now.
And we know who we are.
Yes, yes.
All of us nut jobs here. I actually have a bookmark that I use in my course book that I will extract right now that is I grabbed from a pistachio package, and it says everybody's nuts on there, and with a comical little pistachio with kind of goofy eyes, with the green meat of the pistachio kind of looks like a tongue, and on the other side, I have taped to it the other side of that equation, I guess you could say, is from a chip company, a snack company called Guiltless. I don't know if it's Guiltless Gourmet or something like that, but it's anyway. I just cut out the word Guiltless, and I put that in the back. So that's one of my bookmarks that I flip to once a week when I go to a study group online. And so it kind of reminds me that there's always those two thought systems where we recognize and hopefully non-condemnatory way that we're all crazy, and that when you when you're talking about the new virtual home being more stable, well, whatever stability this world offers, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's all smoke and mirrors here. Yeah,
it is, and it's an interesting thing because how quickly. We just actually had switched over to Awakening Together. It hasn't been, a couple years ago. And everybody's used to everything being a certain way. And then when there was a big upset, which happened yesterday, it was a big upset because no one could find the room. And so we have people who come in at 5:30 in the morning Eastern time to start teaching, and there was no room, no place. And so it was like a little Chinese fire drill. Everybody was trying to figure out where. And Dove finally figured out, he found a classroom that we had developed when we first started Awakening Together. And so he opened that up, and then people could come in. And so it was working really good. But we had already determined that we were going to have to move because Paltalk had lost our username or had deleted our username. And so we had already started putting together this thing, and we were planning on May 1st just, switching everything over. Well, we didn't have opportunity for that at all. It was just suddenly we had to do it. And so, I'm really, really grateful that, I had already done the work I had done, putting in admins and getting it set up, because it was pretty seamless to switch over. And there wasn't a feeling of being lost or displaced. It was actually more of a feeling of being moved into the place where we need to be. And, we were very hesitant and kind of concerned about coming into the religion and spirituality section just because of that, because there are people who have ideas And they, you know, they have their own thoughts about what is right. And so we kind of make ourselves a little target by being in this section. And so now is the time to kind of look at opening ourselves up to more opportunity, because that's what this really represents to me, more opportunity to come in contact with people who are actually interested in, wanting to awaken. And so, you know, it's a blessing, but also means that we're going to have to really keep an eye on things because, you know, people are, you know, like I said, you know, if anybody has their own thought about what is right, it won't be very easy for them to hear us. And certainly,
well, I think that, doesn't that apply to everyone?
Well, yeah, it's true. It's true. It wasn't easy for me to hear us either. Believe me. But
we'd all rather be right than happy.
Well, I'd much rather be right than happy, most all the time. And wouldn't I rather be both? And boy, did I wrestle with that. And, you know, it's impossible. It's impossible for me to be right and happy at the same time. Mm-hmm. And once I realize that, hey, let that shit go.
Well, you know, what occurs to me is perhaps, you know, a good book to go through, and maybe we could contemplate this, is one, there's a wonderful work that Ken Wapnick has done, but one of them is where he has a conversation with a Catholic priest named, I think it's Norris, and I don't know if you've seen that book or not, but it's a good read, and it's interesting, because it basically, it's two people who agree to disagree, and they're good friends. And they just have a very candid discussion about, and not merely at an intellectual level, but on a just kind of the heart of what, you know, the two doctrines are. And it's a priest talking about Christianity and Ken Wapnick talking about A Course in Miracles. And it's a really interesting book because it kind of, you know, highlights how many ways the Course uses the same words, but has a totally different message and intention and you know, conclusion. And, you know, and the Course does that. I think that's one of the brilliant things that A Course in Miracles does is that it accomplishes in numerous ways is takes the mindset that so many of us in the Western world in particular, but really the entire world, because of the pervasiveness of English as a language and, you know, Western thinking in terms of our technology and our culture and so many other things where, you know, unless you're in some remote part of Borneo or something like that, or, you know, Aboriginal, wherever, you know, you're more than likely to have been influenced by Western thinking and therefore the whole Judeo-Christian ethic and so forth. And so I think, you know, one of the things that A Course in Miracles accomplishes brilliantly is to redefine so many of the things that were not only misquoted, but also misrepresented in terms of the fundamental ideas of Christianity and really sets in sharp contrast A Course in Miracles even uses the term, you know, the formal religion has no place in religion, which I think is kind of brilliant because it basically is saying that, you know, once you get into the realm of form rather than content, and the word formal certainly, you know, has to do with the dogma and the ritual and the, you know, the blind adherence, right, to a set of rules and particularly around behavior and so forth, and then that becomes, you know, just like Monty Python, you know, a bunch of people taking off their shoe because the guy that they happen to see doing it, they thought was their idol, you know, you know, the whole worshiping the finger instead of what it's pointing to kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, it's interesting. I was noticing last night, how it is that, It almost seems like the world is presenting itself to me more and more and more every day as being broken, which as, you know, most of my life, it appeared to be normal. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was normal that, you know, babies starve to death. I thought it was normal that, you know, dogs got sick. I thought it was normal that children became rebellious. I thought, you know, I thought every broken thing in the world was normal.
Mm-hmm.
And having thought it was all normal, it never occurred to me to say no, and this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Even though nobody would look at this world and say it makes sense.
No, of course not. I mean, no sane person, you know, would would try to go there. And like Kim Wapnick says, you know, nice people stay in heaven. They don't.
Right.
I mean, we're all seeming refugees here of our own choice. And we've forgotten that we, you know, made our own passports and visas and travel logs and, you know, got into a dream vehicle and, you know, thought we threw away the key to home, and speaking of home and in the mind, of course, and made up a mindless place where insane things happen at every turn. And it's based on insanity. It's just, but we don't see that until we really start looking. And I think that's where, you know, our curriculum is such a gentle one, because it doesn't really ask us to embrace the totality of the insanity and the ultimate absurdity of the desolation that the ego thought system has in store. It basically just asks us to look a little at a time. And we have moments of respite, you know. In the desert, there's, you know, flowers that bloom in the spring, and in every day and in every moment, there's opportunities to see things differently. And we get little glimpses, and we have, you know, things that symbolize for us that awakening and that undoing and all that. But it's so easy to get caught up in thinking that those symbols, again, you know, we're really aiming for the moon, but we get hung up on worshiping the finger again. And
exactly.
And, you know, that's because that's the level of confusion and, you know, the form and content and the, you know, trying to think that our spiritual curriculum could any way possibly have anything to do with behavior or the admonitions of thinking that things have to be done a certain way, or that, you know, one person's path has to be anyone else's path, kind of thing.
Exactly. And you said the key word right there, level confusion.
Yeah.
You know, we see it. I see it so much. And, you know, I used to always wonder, what in the heck is this level confusion? They keep talking about level confusion. It never occurred to me, A, that there was a connection between that and the idea of there is no order of difficulty in miracles. Idea of orders of difficulty and level confusion never occurred to me to be related. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, and I think that's because, you know, we're so enmeshed in our illusion and so identified with it that we think that there's actually, you know, real alternatives in the world. We think that somehow in within the realms of space and time and individuality and bodies and form, that there we're going to find the magic button and the golden solution and, you know, whatever metaphor, you know, there's going to be something here in our specific world that is going to do it for us. And if we just kind of persist, you know, we're going to find it. By golly, you know, the girl whose sister gets the pony for Christmas, and she just gets the box and she opens it up and it's all the, you know, it's full of horseshit basically. And she's like, well, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere, right? You know,
exactly.
But we keep looking for that pony, and we're not going to find it. And I think that's one of my favorite sections in the text is the real alternative, which is in the last chapter, and mm-hmm. I think it's the third or fourth section, something like that. And, you know, it says, you know, perhaps you'd like to go down every single road and try every single possible combination. And, you know.
And apparently we have, and we continue to do so.
And we try, you know. And then in one of Ken Wapnick's audios, he says he applies it to our, you know, romantic and amorous exploits. And he talks about Don Juan, you know, had 1,003 lovers, you know, like he kept thinking, well, the next one will, you know, is going to do it, you know, or maybe it's just the sheer number, you know, but I think we do that in different ways. We keep, you know, going to, if I go to enough workshops or enough conferences, or if I read enough books or listen to enough audios or watch enough videos, or if I, you know, meditate enough, but every single thing that has to do with specifics and form is just another magical solution, which is a level of confusion. It's just, it's saying illusion A is not illusion B, and illusion B is not illusion C, and actually they're all equivalent. That's why there's no order of difficulty in miracles. Exactly. But the only thing that really is different, the real alternative, is if you can metaphorically think of all those illusions on the same plane, you know, in a geometric sense, then like the Cheshire Cat above the chessboard of that battlefield, you know, perpendicular to all those vectors that lead us on the same plane away from the present moment and where we're at, there's this kind of, I think it's sometimes people when they have near-death experiences and they have kind of this vision of someone looking down on them, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe the Cheshire Cat's another good metaphor, you know, something metaphorically above the battleground or on a different axis or in a different dimension that is beyond polarity. And that, I think, is metaphorically what our inner kindness teacher is.
Right.
Or, you know, the Course calls the Holy Spirit or the Jesus of the Course. It's really, you know, these are symbols for that part of our awareness that we took with us into the dream. And actually, we've even got that backwards. I usually start out by saying that part, but it's really the totality of what we are. But we're so used to being thinking of ourselves as this fragmented, separate person or individual, you know, whatever entity we think we are, that is really the part. That's the fragmented, partial consciousness that is it capable, we think, of being conscious of something else, you know, hence the dualistic thinking. And yet the real awareness that we have waits patiently for us to decide against, not in any kind of a condemnatory way, but just like recognizing the futility of all the world's options in terms of finding peace. It doesn't mean that we don't do all the things that we normally would do in the world and like you say, be normal, but it just means that in those moments of sanity, we realize that we could choose peace instead of this being the endless search among the alternatives that the world seems to present to us as, you know, the seductive lures of thinking that somehow peace is going to be found in option A, B, or C and, you know, illusion X, Y, or Z in the world kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's why we try everything. And apparently, you know, if you look at the map of linear time, we've been doing it for billions of years.
Yeah.
we've been trying everything. And, you know, my new realization about the actual intricacies of life, and I've been looking, a lot at, you know, I talked about, you know, I was a biologist before I became an environmental scientist, studied all, you know, the cell, the workings of the physiology of living organic beings, and, you know, noted that, you know, each one of these, one single living cell has, you know, probably thousands of microorganisms that are a part of it. It's like a little community. Mm-hmm. It's like a little world unto its own, where it has all these little characters that are in there doing different kind of work. And there's a guy who's a medical illustrator, and I'm trying to think of his name, who has done these amazing, David Belinsky is the guy's name. And he has done these amazing animations of the living cells, the living, and you know, basically, you know, no one can actually see into a cell. You know, they're uh-huh. even with the greatest microscopes, we can only see certain organelles but we can't see the whole workings of it.
Uh-huh.
But this guy, this medical illustrator, has done this amazing visualization of these what is going on inside of a cell. So each individual cell in our body is an entire world, a community of mm-hmm. beings that have come together for to make that living thing, and we have billions of them, and each one of them is one of the miracle principles tells us, the sonship is the sum of all creation. So mm-hmm. each one of these little beings is a member of the sonship. It's not like, you know, I'm the member of the sonship and all of them are just ancillary or whatever.
Or just silly.
I'm just silly. You know, every one of those has got their own life too, and they all live their own life, and I'm living my own life thinking that I'm an individual being. But I personally, as an individual, could never live on my own without the support and nourishment of the everything of the world around me. So I'm not even mm-hmm. independent. You know, if you took me out all of right. this environment, put me like out where the space station is, you know, for instance, I would die and pretty quickly too, because space doesn't support those things. And so
not terribly hospitable, huh?
Not terribly hospitable. And so the thing that I think I am, all these worlds within worlds that are this body that, you know, I think I am, are really not it either. We are so totally interdependent on everything else on the planet, in the universe. All of life is interdependent. And so that doesn't mean that I need to save all of life. What that really means is that I need to save myself so that I can know my true place in this world, which is nowhere. And my true relationship to this illusion, which is nothing. There is no relationship to the illusion. There is no relationship of me truly here. And so all of these things have been elaborately designed by me to fool me into thinking that I am something I am not. And
Well put.
Getting through that yeah. is pretty impressive, and there are some who have, I believe, who have gone through that, and Jesus being one of them. I'm thinking in my own little way, maybe Ken was one of those, that Ken actually did, you know, see through the veil. But, you know, Ramana Maharshi or Nisargadatta or, you know, you name these guys who have, you know, become awakened. And, you know, what is it that they've seen? They've seen that they are not this. That's it. That's what you see. You see, I'm not that. And
it's our not no conversation again, isn't it?
It's our not no conversation again. Exactly.
Yeah. Because the not no is basically just saying, no matter how sophisticated, no matter how amazingly, just staggeringly complex both our inner and outer worlds are, you know, from the microscopic, as you were just pointing out with the, you know, your biological illustration. I think I just found a YouTube clip of it, by the way, of David Belinsky, which I'll check out. The cosmic scheme of things, you know, the galactic interplay and, you know, all the things that are happening in what we think of as deep space, and at both levels of the order of magnitude, the orders of difficult magnitude, we might say, that we you know, have to use elaborate measures to explore, you know, telescopes and microscopes and now, you know, other technologies, and yet our metaphysics tells us that those things are not far away. They exist exactly and completely within the mind and only. and therefore, our real curriculum is only in and about the mind, because that's really the only place we have any say-so. And we can simplify it even further, that the only real alternative we have is to throw this big two-position knife switch in the mind in our mad scientist laboratory, and, you know, throw it from its seemingly locked position on ego, and the not know is just saying, I deny that denial, that negation of truth, and switch it over to our inner kindness teacher's curriculum, which then gives us a peaceful resolution by seeing that everything we made here is a massive hologram. It's a gentle, silly nothing that we've become so enamored with and so, you know, wrapped up in, and we idolized to such, and we, you know, put the specifics on such incredible pedestals that, you know, we don't even realize we've done it. And which is really no different than what the Course says is picking up the sword, because any time that we make differences a big deal, we're creating a polarization or making up an idea that opposites could exist. And then we use the universe and, you know, from the macroscopic to the microscopic and everything in between to reinforce that idea. And that's that outer shield of oblivion again, where we basically, you know, have convinced ourselves that, wow, I this is a big deal world here, isn't it? I mean, I got stuff to do and places to go and people to see and seemingly others to relate to and to contend with and occasionally have fun with and so we get so wrapped up in it, and yet there's that calm, you know, like the forgotten song in places like that in the Course remind us, there's this quiet place that says, could you just stop for a minute? That I was having dinner with a couple of friends who also happened to be Course students last night here in Livermore, California, and these two gentlemen had never seen the stop it therapy.
I've got that on that. Yeah.
The Bob Newhart one, yeah. And so I played that for them on my phone, and we all laughed about it. I enjoy it, seeing it every time I watch it. But it really ultimately is that simple. It's just a decision in the mind to just say no to to the shenanigans and the insanity of a non-existent identity and the thought system born and the world that is a reflection of that thought system born from that tiny mad idea, and it doesn't have to be a condemnatory thing, because if we're trying to do it that way, then we're basically, you know, using that same thought system to destroy itself, and that doesn't work. But if we just recognize that it never had any reality, then it disappears of itself. But the only way we can do that is by revealing our intention to be separate, and recognizing that that hasn't worked, and then releasing our identification with it. And so that's the two R's of the reveal, release, and replace. And we just, once we do the first two with the help of our inner kindness teacher, same teacher takes care of the third step for us. We don't have to do anything at all for the replacement, because when we let go of nothing, everything that's there and has been waiting patiently for us returns. And I think that's where the solace and the peace comes in, and our moments of reinforcement when we truly allow ourselves to forgive ourselves for having chosen insanity, and by looking at it, just by seeing, wow, that, like you started our conversation this morning with, is just by seeing that it's insane, it's crazy, it's a vast desolate desert, you know, metaphorically, that we put ourselves in, but that's a dream desert on a dream planet in a dream universe, and it's a result of a dream thought system, and we don't have to beat ourselves up for dream.
No,
it would be insane to do that. Yeah.
It would be insane to do that, and yet I've done it before, and I bet you have too. And nighttime dream. I'm responsible for something I was dreaming at night, or I know one time my husband woke up in the morning and he was so mad at me. I was like, what are you, what's going on? Why are you mad? Well, you're just so stupid. I'm like, what is going on? Why are you so mad? And he says, because in my dream last night, we were over at this peak place and we had climbed up there and you were standing right next to the edge and you were just about to fall over and you would not move. And you know, why wouldn't you move? And I'm like, I don't know. It was your dream. I Why are you being mad at me for something you dreamed?
But that's yeah, exactly. But we do it all the time. Is we forget that our waking dreams and our sleeping dreams are the same, and that there's, I think it's one of the earlier chapters in the text that it says, you know, they're different in, you know, form, but that's all. That's, I mean, there's really no difference between the two, and in the reality of what we are is that's just an artificial transition from one dream to the next, and we do it, you know, typically twice a day we go from one into the other, and then from the other back into the other.
Or so we think. So we think.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing. It's this thinking that what
makes it so
is really happening. And you know, so I assume when I lay down on my bed and I close my eyes that I go into a place called sleep. And I still remain there as a body where I'm not aware of myself as a body. I'm not aware of what is happening around me if I'm in a deep enough sleep. And so, you know, my question is always, is this really happening, or is this a part of my dream? And of course, it is a part of my dream. It's the illusion. So no, I'm not really sleeping. I'm not really dreaming. I'm not really doing any of these things. Excuse me. Including coughing. I'm not doing any of those things. And yet I continue to persist in saying that I am, in looking at my life as if I am, mm-hmm. in living my life as if I am. And so I'm not doing anything to deny the denial of truth.
Right.
What I'm doing is supporting the illusion by continuing to believe in it and continuing to have opinions about it. Because it's the opinion that is what's keeping it alive. It's not the reality of the illusion. It's the my thoughts about the illusion that are keeping it in my mind. If I wasn't thinking about it, it wouldn't be here.
Right. We breathe life into it. And physics, I think, gives us a clue of that. You know, it says that we collapse the wave function in order to make matter real. You know, and basically, and the whole revolution in physics that is the elephant in the room that nobody still wants to address. In fact, they call it the ghost in the machine, is the idea that mind is primary because of the double slit experiment, you know, showing conclusively and repeatedly that our thoughts determine the outcome and of the wave particle duality and our expectations. You know, how can you take mind out of that equation? You can't. And I think that's where all the physicists, you know, in Copenhagen looked at each other and said, how are we going to deal with this? I mean, we can't even deal with it in our own minds, let alone tell the world that the whole Newtonian Cartesian model, you know, had some serious omissions. What the primary one being mind is primary. You know, it's not just something that we can, you know, throw in a variable for it. Essentially, I saw an article the day before, where, you know, physics is now trying to make a consciousness particle or something like that. And if I run across the article, I'll post it on ACM blog or something. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, once again, you know, the ego, we all do it. And it's not just this one researcher, but, you know, we all try to fit the round peg into the square hole, and which is, you know, we try to bring truth to illusion. We try to say, well, there's got to be a, you know, a particle that explains consciousness or some kind of physical thing that explains the non-physical, because we don't get non-physicality as egos, and that egos can't get that.
They can't get that. Yeah.
But the good news is that, you know, the dream may be foolproof, but it's not God-proof, as the Course says. And that's our real salvation. That's our true safety and our true release, is realizing that our mind is completely accessible at all times and all places, independent of any circumstance or situation. And we can all choose peace instead of the dream. And it's really, you know, looked at sanely, it's a nightmare, but it's a nightmare that has no reality and no outcome. You know, it only appears to have consequence. And within the world, of course it does. The world as we think of it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And we would be silly to not do what is appropriate, you know, to, you know, go get a checkup if we, you know, feel something, you know, needs to be checked on, which I just did myself the other day, and go, you know, brush your teeth or, you know, take care of pay your bills, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's not talking about that. It's not about behavior. It's not about the form. It's always about looking at the mind gently and peacefully and saying, I could choose the awareness that suggests that the dream is not my real identity. And that's a staggering idea. It's really more revolutionary, more staggering than anything that science has ever you know, given to us to look at, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. It actually is extremely impressive when you think about the fact that we keep going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper mm-hmm. into the illusion. And it's like those fractals, you know, the deeper you go into the fractal, the more you see it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it never becomes something that it's not. and holographic. Yeah. And yes, it is out of the body. Some people are writing stuff on the board. It is self-realization. It is coming to the place where I know the actual source of my being, and I am not confused about what that source is. And this is what the ego is very confused about, what the source of its being is, believes it's its own source, and believing that it is its own source, feels that it is somehow responsible now for itself and its own preservation and its own comfort and its own happiness and its own joy. And you know what, that's a really stressful position to be in.
Oh yeah. It's horrific.
It's horrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we know intuitively we can't achieve it. Hey, do we have time to read a quick FAQ?
Sure we do. We have about 22 minutes. So,
okay. How about 11:15?
11:15. That's a good time. All right. Okay.
So go ahead and start reading it while
you're looking. Go ahead and start. It's a 2007 one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it starts out, question 1115. Some time ago, I slowly came to agree with the answer given in question 767, dated July 20th, 2005. However, there hasn't been any current, quote, filling in the gap or, quote, holy instance of joy, happiness, or anything of a positive nature to make an alternative route from the world ego to notice. The result seems to be a blah passing of life without any enthusiastic interest in anything through an acceptance of ACIM ideas. How can one take any joy in the elusive and the unreal? One could feel, quote, guilty, unquote, for not having fulfilled the promises made in the text, or at least disappointed, and surely feeling like we're just treading water until at last we leave the body at the least. So what is an ACIM believer to do while here in the body? The idea that sometime there will be an atonement is great, but how does one feel good about ourselves while we could still be in our bodies for the next 20, 30 years or more? And quote, horrors, speaking of which, end quotes, we could come back to more ego illusions. After 16 years of reading, it feels like a labyrinth which has no exit, and that the promises are but more illusions. Is there ever some light somewhere in this tunnel which I have been traveling these many years? I'll just read the next two short paragraphs.
Okay, because I'm relating to this in ways that I would never have thought like a year ago, I would relax. So go ahead and continue. Uh-huh.
Well, I think it's because eventually we get to that, you know, fifth stage in the development of trust where we realize that, you know, we have to really relinquish all of our misery, which is really the identity of the self. Anyway, I'll continue with the two shorter paragraphs of the question, then you can start on the answer. How's that sound?
Okay.
I haven't experienced any, quote, filling in the gap or holy instance, in quotes, of joy, happiness, or anything of a positive nature to make an inviting alternative route from the worldly ego. The result seems to be a blah passing of life without any enthusiastic interest in anything through an acceptance of the ideas of A Course in Miracles. How can one take any joy in the elusive and the unreal? Oh, I think I read that, didn't I? Oh, well.
No, you didn't.
I didn't? Oh, maybe it's just...
It's repeated, I think.
Oh, it's just... Oh, I see. Okay. One could feel guilty for not having fulfilled the promises made in the text, or at least disappointed, and surely feel like we're just treading water until at least we leave the body. Maybe it was repeated. Okay. So what is a Course believer to do while here in the body? The idea that sometime there will be an atonement is great, but how does one feel good about oneself while still in the body for the next 20? I think those...
It's a repetition of what was already there.
I think
I'm actually that's why you're confused.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay. So anyway,
over and over.
Right. Yeah. It's deja vu all over again. Okay. So anyway, let's just skip to the answer, which.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. First off, I wanted to say this very notion that was in the very first part of this question, where the questioner says. Let's see, where is it? It says something about, you know, at someday I will accept the atonement. But it could be a good 20 or 30 years from now. Someday I will accept the atonement. And that was a huge confusion for me because I thought for years that someday I would accept the atonement. I never actually realized that today I accept the atonement and now I accept the atonement and I accept the atonement now. I'm constantly accepting the atonement whenever I'm asking for help. Whenever I'm saying, Holy Spirit, I don't know what this is and what it's for. Please inform me. And that's what you were talking about, that step in the development of trust is uh-huh. when you get to the point where you say, I don't know anything.
right.
And when I don't know anything, I have to completely trust the one who does know. And so when Jesus says there is, what is it? He says, give up all judgment and ask at every moment, what do I really want or what do I want? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's accepting the atonement right there, mm-hmm. giving up my judgment and asking, what do I want? And then allowing myself to be informed because my mind is incapable of knowing the truth. The ego mind is incapable of knowing the truth. But when I move out of the way with that,
the three R's, yeah. That's just a mnemonic I find helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you do that, that replacement is the Holy Spirit's thought system replacing my ego thought system.
Yeah.
And that is accepting the atonement. Mm-hmm. So let me read the answer here. Says, since the Course's teachings turns our usual way of thinking upside down, we should perhaps begin by turning your image upside down. The world is the tunnel, and the light both in the tunnel and at its end is the message of the Course. For you and countless other students, it does not always seem that way. That is because, I like that, the world is the tunnel and the light both in the tunnel and at the end is the message.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
Nice.
Which speaks exactly what you're saying is that our forgiveness practice not only leads to a complete acceptance and a complete undoing of our misery, but we have moments of respite in those moments when we choose against the ego, not in any kind of, you know, warrior likes pick up the sword way or any judgmental or condemnatory way, but where we just say, this doesn't work. I'm dropping this thing. And in those moments, we are peaceful, and that's where, you know, like you say, it is now. It is, we can do that moment to moment to moment, and as we string enough of those moments together, we realize, wow, I could generalize. I could see peace instead of this, not just little, you know, bursts at a time, but consistently. And that's where it seems like it's a long time to string enough of those together. But it's really that's the real alternative.
And it is, it seems like a long time, but really it's all only this instant.
Right, right.
It's only in this instant. That's the only time I have to choose. Mm-hmm. It's the only time I have to be. It's the only time I don't have to worry about in 30 years where I'm going to be or where I was last week. All I have to know is right now where I am accepting my mind to be corrected by the one who knows. And it says that it doesn't always seem that way. That is because the old song goes, we are so accustomed to looking for love, light in all the wrong places. If at any time you have felt a deep resonance and a calm certainty in recognition that the passage of the Course is true, you have access, that the message of the Course is true, you have accessed your right mind, and that is the holy instant. It is no more glamorous than that, yet hardly insignificant. And he quotes from the teacher's manual, a light has entered the darkness. It may be a single light, but that is enough. And that's enough to make me cry, just knowing that.
Yeah.
Just that choice. A light has entered the darkness.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We're already home, like you say. We just, you know, and it is a very heartfelt thing. And there's an awareness even beyond the emotion that is so profound that we can't even, you know, we could attempt to speak about it, but we know that that's what's calling us home. That's the beauty that's beyond anything we can possibly imagine here. That is the innocence that we all share that we thought we threw it away. What a crazy idea. Isn't it bizarre?
Well, it is bizarre. And the fact that we could even think that we could throw it away would obviously mean that, you know, God made a mistake when he made me. And it's his fault.
What was he thinking?
Oh, why did he give me this free choice? And why did he let me, you know, do this crazy thing? Well, you know, he didn't. It hasn't happened. You know, there's the only way that you're going to convince me that that's not a monster in the corner is to turn on the light and let me see that it's my clothes hanging up there. This is all that has to happen. And so, you know, I just have to be willing to see it as something different. I just have to be willing to look at it and see it as something different. So he says, the answer continues on. Eons of lies are undone in an instant of recognizing that truth is true. Appreciation of any small but truly effective step in the accomplishment of the atonement is the only source of hope in journeying with the Course. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Appreciation that I am actually doing it, that I'm actually moment by moment by moment I'm choosing. Sometimes I forget. I don't beat myself up for it. I just go back to choosing. And you know, eventually, you know, it becomes a habit. It becomes the normal way that I operate, and it becomes more and more and more ingrained. But don't despair because your efforts appear to be worthless, or you're not feeling that great expanded joy that you expected. The only reason you're not feeling that is because you're still blocking it.
Right.
It is actually there. You actually have that joy, that peace, that love, that harmony. That's all inside of you right now at this very moment. And the reason that you are not experiencing it is because you are blocking it with this belief in guilt and sin and fear. Mm-hmm. And so that's why my, you know, kind of watchword is when I feel an upset coming on, any kind of an upset, I look immediately to where is the guilt. Yesterday when I came and, you know, Pal Talk was down and things were going crazy and I started feeling a little bit of an upset. Do you know why I felt a little bit of an upset? Because I felt like it was my fault and my responsibility, and that I really needed to do something to make it work. And so I started out with this like panic, and but very, very quickly recognized, oh, this is not feel good, and where's the guilt in this? And when I saw what the guilt was, I recognized that I was assigning the cause and the solution to myself. And being that I was assigning the cause and the solution to myself, I was really on the hot seat, and I really had to do something. But when I recognized that I was doing that, I took away that assignment, and I just said, you know, Holy Spirit, you got to do this, because I don't know how. I'm not going to try to figure out how. I'm not going to go looking up things. Just tell me what to do. And I released my ownership of the situation. I released my responsibility for the situation and turned it over to the one who really knows. And it was amazing. And people who here will tell you, it was remarkable how quickly, by 11:30 yesterday morning, we had moved into a new room, and we had all the admins almost, there's a couple that I missed, but all the admins were able to come in as admins. We had messages out to everybody about what's happened and how to do this. You know, Phil made a little video and put it on YouTube to show how to get into the room. All these things happened with very little activity on my part at all. I just boom, 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 boom. I sat here all morning. I didn't even have a cup of coffee. I didn't get up from this desk to use the bathroom, nothing. I just did what came to be done, and I was perfectly happy and joyful the whole time because I wasn't in charge. Mm-hmm. It was not me. I wasn't in charge.
and kudos to the spirit within you that had that recognition. I mean, isn't that great? You know, and it's not the Lynn, it's not the Bruce, it's the willingness that did the work. You know, and it's really, you know, the willingness is really just a symbol of our resonance with that awareness we took into the dream, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I would not have had that recognition or that understanding or that knowing had I not been practicing, mm-hmm. practicing. And so, you know, don't think that, the Course is, you know, Jesus says, you know, all you got to do is, you know, do the lessons. You don't even have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in any of it. You don't have to just do it as I'm telling you. And just doing it was enough.
yeah. And even if we have issues with the form or you know, some aspects of the things that, you know, like you say, if we just give it a try, just be willing to suspend our disbelief, which is really suspending the suspension of a crazy belief that and then that means that, you know, that we're giving up the nothingness and allowing the everything that we really are to, as one being, to shine the light.
Yeah. So I'll continue with the rest of this paragraph. He says, I'm just going to read that last. When you decide to choose, allow the Holy Spirit to choose for God for you, which is my favorite section, chapter 5, the decision for God. When you let the Holy Spirit do the deciding, it says, eons of lies are undone in an instant of recognizing that truth is true. Appreciation of any small but truly effective step in the accomplishment of the atonement is the only source of hope in journeying with the Course. The ego works in grand strokes, roaring and shrieking, shutting down pal talk, causing all kinds of trouble. But it lies. The small, still voice of the Holy Spirit whispers, but speaks the truth. It speaks for God, using the body as an instrument for learning to listen to that voice, with the world as a classroom would seem a worthy use for them during the next 20 or 30 years. So, you know, it's a, you know, if you really want, you know, to do this, you can spend the next 20 or 30 years, you know, doing what you normally do, watching TV, you know, going on vacation, going to work. You can do all those things for the next 20 or 30 years. Or you can do those things with the Holy Spirit and allow the Holy Spirit to whisper to you the truth and to listen to the truth about anything that seems to be happening. And I'm guaranteeing you will be in joy. Because that's been my experience since I decided to let go. Just joy. And I just laugh. I just laugh. Now when something comes up, I'm like, holy crap, look at that. I thought it was bad before, but look. How my ego is just pulling out all the stops, trying to regain its foot. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yep. And even when we have what seem to be setbacks and backsliding and you know, it seems hopeless, I think in those moments when we do what you just suggested, Lynn, is just step back and allow that inner quiet to re-inform our awareness, we realize that nothing has happened. You know, not one note in Heaven's Song was missed, as the Course says, and we really have been able to stay in the peace in those moments, and in fact, we never left. We just had lapses in our consciousness, lapses in our awareness.
Exactly. And when we come out of those lapses, we actually see, I knew this.
Yeah, it was nothing. We indulged in a little bout of nothingness, and however long that spell seemed to last was just, and it can be years or millennia, you know, the idea is to bring it down to where those lapses are insignificant and then eventually vanish altogether.
Yeah, just shorten the suffering somewhat, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep.
This gets rid of it all. There's no need for it. You recognize there's no reason for it and that it's unnecessarily painful. And why would you want to do it?
Exactly.
When I recognized I was the one who wanted it, that was a big blow. I'm telling you, that was a big blow to me to recognize I was doing this to myself. I wanted the drama. I wanted the suffering. I wanted the guilt. I wanted all those things because that's, I think, what gave me form. Mm-hmm, it gives me mm-hmm. form. So, of course, you don't want to keep hanging on to it. But it's not worth it.
And forgive ourselves when we find ourselves in that drama royalty role again, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah.
So let's see. We'll go ahead and read the last paragraph here.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll do the, I'll put on the meditation.
Can we read it?
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
Okay. No doubt the beliefs you previously held about God, yourself, and the world have been extinguished, or at least mortally wounded during your many years of course study. Their demise is no small accomplishment, considering the investment in learning the erroneous concepts. If such change is possible in learning the principles of the Course, it is reasonable to believe that everything else it promises is also within reach. Advances toward the fulfillment of its promises are frequently obscured by the interference of expectations that have nothing to do with the goal of the Course. We do not always want what it promises, wanting instead fanciful substitutes for true spiritual progress. That is why Jesus tells us, some of your greatest advances you have judged as failures, and some of your deepest retreats you have evaluated as success. In other words, we don't know what's going on and would be incapable of evaluating it even if we did. And so in his gentle wisdom he adds, put yourself not in charge of this, for you cannot distinguish between advance and retreat. Taken to heart, this inevitably leads to some sense of relief. We do not have to know what's going on. If 16 years seems like a long time, it may be comforting to know that in an instant of truly doing nothing by not judging, we, quote, slip past centuries of effort and escape from time. And that's from chapter 18, section 7, paragraph 7 in the text. This is the light that we find in the tunnel of the ego's insanity when we are willing to not put ourselves in charge of the atonement. It not only lights our way, but lightens our load. So that's question 1115 from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles outreach, facim.org FAQs, the frequently asked questions. So
it's amazing. There are so many of these, and they're so good. A lot of people think that Ken wrote all these, but he did not.
Mm-hmm.
There were many people there at the foundation who were answering these questions. And I just think what an incredible gift that would be to be one of those persons who had got this, you know, here's a question for you, Lynn. You know, see if you can, you know, get up with the Holy Spirit and make an answer to this that's going to help people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What a great job that would be.
Yeah. And to put in a quick plug for the folks in Temecula that are carrying on the work that Ken's legacy, began and doing a brilliant job with it. Jeffrey and Rosemary in particular and all the staff there are just doing a wonderful job of picking up where Ken left off. And if you can't make it to Temecula to see them in person, which is always fun to do, I've only done it once myself, you can now enjoy the streaming programs that are about once a month. They either have an academy class or a one-day workshop of one kind or another about once a month. And you can go to facim.org and check those out. And I've only missed one or two of them, but they're just wonderful. And I always savor each one because the depth and breadth of what they cover and the profound understanding that they share is just marvelous. And can't say enough good things about those programs, as well as all the other things they have on the website, and to take advantage of the they're phasing out their printed material and in favor of the electronic stuff. So you can if you check their website, you can also find sales on some of the printed materials if you want to add to your physical library. And then, of course, the Foundation for Inner Peace has a lot of wonderful resources as well. The sister organization that publishes A Course in Miracles, acim.org, and lots of great stuff there and more things on the way, which I can talk about later. But anyway, I'm reachable at acimblog.com. And I try to, list things like that are helpful and useful to people.
And what about the Freedom Retreat?
Oh, yes, and the Weekend of Freedom Retreat. And thank you for bringing that up, because in the block of rooms that they reserved at the Estes Park YMCA, where it's being held, has been extended to, I believe, it's May 2nd. So anybody who's planning to go there north of the Denver, Colorado area, in Estes, beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, June 16th through the 19th. I will be there as one of the presenters, along with Gary Renard, Cindy Laura Renard, David Hoffmeister, Craig Villarubia, Lori Coburn, Maria Felipe. I think I'm forgetting a couple other people. But anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. And there's already, quite a few people who have signed up, so we've already got a great momentum happening. And as you pointed out, Lynn, it's a wonderful facility with swimming pools and hiking trails and all kinds of things that you could, bring your family if you wanted to make a family outing out of it. Stay a little before or after kind of thing, or whatever. And it is itself, without the conference on A Course in Miracles there, a destination resort in itself, and for that reason it books up quickly. So that's why it's particularly nice that they've extended the hold on those block of rooms reserved for the Weekend of Freedom Retreat participants until the 2nd of May to be able to attend there. And thank you, Lynn, for originally mentioning that to me so that I could be a participant, as well as having done their website. So,
yeah, I'm thrilled. And Dances is asking, is there a place that she could set up a tent? Actually, Dances, yeah, it's right by the National Forest. There's lots of camping places right around that area. So you couldn't actually come on the grounds and put up a tent, but you could definitely go to the national park and set up a tent and just drive into the meetings.
Yeah.
I don't see that there'd be a problem with that. and
not very far. Check with Barrett and Cheryl for the logistics on that. I know there's arrangements being made for people who want to do things like that, but I would check with them and find out, you know, what the logistics are. It's probably pretty straightforward. So
the meals
are included with the lodging too. So
Cheryl just came in the room right when we were talking about this.
Oh, okay.
So and she says there are a few campgrounds close to the park. Yes,
good.
Yeah, because it's a nice area of that. And she says Ann Oswald Laird is our featured healer, who will be joining us there. So I'm not sure what kind of healing she does, but the last one I went to, they had a lady I think who did Reiki and you know they it's kind of cool. It's a great kind of a retreat. So anyway, I guess our time is up. I want to thank you so much, Bruce.
And, thank you, Lynn.
What a joy it is to spend my Saturday morning with you. And
likewise, as always.
Too cool. And I'm going to hang up with you, and I'm going to put on a guided meditation with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Once again, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Likewise.
And, Bruce, I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
That's right.
Bruce is doing a mini series here on Sunday nights, tomorrow night, and then the next week also. So he was on last week. It's 3 weeks in a row. And so he will be here tomorrow night at what time is it?
It's 6 o'clock Pacific, and I'll be
9
talking,
p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. And I'll be talking about the 3 R's of forgiveness, which we just briefly touched on today.
Excellent. Outstanding. Love you, Bruce. And
likewise, so much, and to all in the room and everywhere. So.
All righty.